Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 169th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Apollinaire Muñoneza. He was raised in a large Catholic family in a rural region near Rugenheri, Rwanda. After living through the genocide as a senior in high school, he went on to study chemistry, first at the National University of Rwanda, and then did his graduate work in South Africa, where he also learned English. He, his wife, and five children then lived and worked in Botswana, where he was a senior lecturer in green chemistry. Apollinaire arrived in Maine just last summer, in July of 2017. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Apollinaire. Thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you.
So you grew up near a volcano with banana trees and gorillas living in and around it. I wonder what else you can tell us about the Rwanda of your childhood that would help us be able to picture your life as a boy.
Thank you very much, Karen. I was born in a rural area in Western Rwanda, that is in the current Nyabihu district, in the current administrative mapping. As a young boy, I attended primary school, of course, but on top of that, I also enjoyed some domestic activities with my parents. So I was going to school, but from school, I was very busy at home, like looking after cows, fetching water. That was the rural activities in that time. Visiting friends, doing many things at home. And that was very good for me. I enjoyed that time. I had friends. We shared everything. We shared many things, games, storytelling. But most of the time, I enjoyed the traditional wedding ceremonies. I also enjoyed how elder people could come together in family meetings. Then I enjoyed how they could handle the matters, how we could learn from them. So it was really a good childhood. And in short, I was raised in a nuclear family, but also I had a big influence from the extended family, because that time it was allowed for anybody in the village, the elder in the village, to see you doing something he will estimate not to be good. He was allowed to correct you, even punish you. And your parents were okay with that, and the whole society was okay with that. And that is the kind of setup I grew up in.
That's the kind of being raised by a village idea,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Did your grandparents live nearby?
My grandparents, my grandfather was living around, but he died when I was 7 years old. So I barely remember his face, but I remember him.
Yeah.
My grandmother died a long time ago, but my grandfather died when I was around 7 years old.
But I think that's interesting. As you mentioned, you went to the elders to solve difficult problems.
Yeah.
What kinds of problems would people take to the elders?
Yeah, you know, in a rural setup, there are some small misunderstanding which might come that, oh, you see, the cow, this person went to my area, this and that, or the child of this person did this to my child. So such issues and others, maybe at my age, I could not understand.
But yes, maybe marital issues.
Well, maybe marital issues, that I could not know. But I remember such kind of issues were coming up in the society, in families, and elders could get together and discuss the matter and get solutions.
In your area, were most people doing subsistence agriculture, growing their own vegetables and their own cows, meat and milk? Is that how food came into your lives, mostly by your own hands?
Yeah, correct. Because it's not like there's an industrial agriculture. It was mostly subsistence, where everybody will look after his land and get food from there. And maybe on top of that, some selling and get some money, but it was mostly subsistence agriculture at that time.
And how many cows did your family have?
We had about 10 cows when I was growing up, but again, things were changing. Land was becoming small and small. farms were becoming smaller and smaller, so it was difficult to afford keeping a good number of animals. But when I was growing, we had around five at home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And did you know them by their personalities and their names?
Yeah, they had names, of course. They have names, and we used to call them by their names, and then they will follow. It's amazing. It's amazing. They will know you. They know your voice. Then when you call them, they will come. They will follow you sometime.
I think that's very sweet, and I love that for children.
Yeah.
To have that kind of husbandry experience. To understand that it's a reciprocity with your food.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a pretty beautiful beginning for you.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about your parents and the kinds of things they believed in and wanted for you and your brother and sisters?
Yeah, thank you very much. My father was a very hardworking person. It was very rare to see him sitting doing nothing. And he kept telling us that. So you'll just start with an activity. After an hour, you move to another one. After an hour, you move to another one until the end of the day. Now, you know, kids are always, then we come to complain that this old man, we don't have time to rest. We're always busy. Then he used to tell us, you know what? Resting does not mean sleeping. You can change activity and rest. If you're doing something very, very demanding, you can change and move to a less demanding activity, and then you are resting in the meantime. So for him, time was very, very precious. That I remember, and I kept it in my heart until now. And another thing, my father was a man of integrity, because I remember most of the time our house was full of people coming for, like, the issues we're talking about in a moment, coming to meet him, coming to discuss this and that, because they knew he would give a fair advice. He'd not give any biased advice in what he was dealing with. And the whole village, really, I could see that he was a respected man because of that. Then my mother was a very loving mother. We felt very comforted around her. He loved every kid in the village. Everybody could come to her and get comfort around her. But the memory I have of my mother is that she taught everything I know about prayer, song, Catholic faith, everything I learned from mother. Everything I have now is from my mother. So they wanted their children to be respectful, to have moral values, to be hardworking, to be educated, and to be responsible citizens. That they kept telling us every time, not only in words, but also in their practice. The life they were living was showing us, no, they want us to go this direction. So that I remember from my parents.
So important to bring both.
Yeah.
To talk about it and then show what that looks like.
Yeah.
It was a lot harder.
They were both important because, you know, the mother and father, when they come together and raise their children, you get like a full story of how life should be.
Yeah. It's a fabulous foundation.
Yeah.
And then in 1994, the unimaginable disaster of the genocide swept through your homeland. In the month of April of that year, an estimated 1 million people were killed. And you said it is impossible for you to talk about your life without talking about the genocide. And I wonder what you can tell us about the genocide.
Yeah. In 1994, I was 21 years old. I was attending high school. I was about to complete my high school. I was away from home. Then quickly, the genocide came. So my parents, six of my siblings, hundreds of my extended family members they just vanished in a second. So that was a very big turning moment in my life, of course, because I had now to learn how to live without them, how to live in such different life setup. So emotionally, financially, in all corners of life, I was affected, of course. So that was now a new beginning with me. That was like starting life afresh. So it happened. And from that moment, my life, like, I would say that it took a different turn. Okay. But thank God I managed to move on. I managed to go to school again, finish my school, continued my school, got employed, get married, founded my own family, and now here I am. But let me mention that there are other people who could not come to terms with this tragedy. Until now, some survivors are still really, really struggling with trauma, with excessive stress. They cannot cope with what happened. So it's a challenge, I think, some people have to live with for a long, long time. Now, we cannot go through details of genocide now, but let me mention that in every genocide, there's a step of preparation where people are dehumanized, people are classified, people are given names, injustices are committed, human rights are violated in front of everyone, and most of the people don't pay attention. It's like they're not bothered, mostly because maybe they say, no, it's not me, there's other people. But in the end, everybody pays the price. In the end, consequences, when they come, they reach to everyone. So I'll say that if people could pay attention to what's happening around them, people could pay attention to any sort of injustices taking place, maybe we can save a lot for the future generations.
I think that would be so important, to make some sense out of what's happened in your life and to try to make it better going forward. If we can possibly avert future genocides by being aware of these symptoms that are building, we can save lives.
Correct.
You said the other day when we were speaking, part of the systematic dehumanization of the other includes calling people names, making them not human, like cockroach or snake or rat.
Correct.
Or everywhere in the world, we have examples of different animals that humans get called to divorce oneself from the connection that we all share. But you also said that there's a part of deciding who's in and who's out, who's a citizen and who's not, who's a member of the team and who's not.
Yeah, correct.
I think that's really powerful. And we have so many examples of that today in our own lives, of where we're really asking about citizenship and who's in and who's not. And I thank you for calling attention to that. It's very sobering and heartbreaking. Every time I learn more about Rwanda, my heart breaks all over again. And there's so many fabulous resources for learning about the genocide. I think it's important, as hard as it is, it's so important to look, not forget, pay attention to what exactly happened and how can we make sure we don't do that again.
Yeah, that's correct. Because if people learn from past mistakes, it will be much easier to avoid them in the future. Because there's a saying that goes that a wise man learns from his mistakes. But I think someone who is even much wiser learns from other people's mistake. So if you learn from your own mistake, yes, it's good, but you have felt the pitch.
Yes.
But if you learn from other people's mistake, then you stand a good chance of saving yourself and saving everyone, and the results could be much, much better. So you're correct saying that if you could learn, read, find out really what happened, we can avert different tragedies around the world. And the Never Again slogan, as we say it, Never Again, Never Again, should now become a reality.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
It's kind of the perspective of the youngest child, isn't it? Where you not only learn from your own experiences, but you watch your older siblings' blunders and get to learn from them as well. So here we have an opportunity to learn. And, you know, I have to say Rwanda's been exemplary at moving on, you know, without forgetting, building a new government, building a clean, thriving place to invest. And there's ecotourism and all kinds of things going on in Rwanda today that you might not imagine after such grief. So injustice is costly. What does standing up to injustice look like? How do you do that?
Standing up for injustice is it requires sacrifice. It requires to forget about oneself. It requires really to think beyond what an average person can think of. But it's important to do. It's very, very important to do that, because injustice, if it is around for a long time, everyone will suffer from that. Everyone will suffer from that. Of course, it requires sacrifice. It's not easy. Many people, especially when they are not affected directly, they might say, okay, we'll see tomorrow what happens. We'll see tomorrow. They turn a blind eye. But fighting injustice is a noble cause. I think all of us, whoever can, or every one of us, should embrace and see what type of little contribution everybody can bring to that.
Have courage.
Yeah.
Stand up for your neighbor
when
you see injustice.
Yeah.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Apollinaire Munyaneza. After the genocide in Rwanda, he attended the National University, where he studied chemistry. He eventually got his doctorate in chemistry in South Africa and has worked as a green chemist doing research and lecturing at universities since that time. What was it that caused you to get into chemistry, Apollinaire? Was your family's members were priests and farmers, and you went for chemistry?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
It's a contrast. It's like, it might sound as a contrast. But what happened that at high school, I did a major in science. So I was introduced to different subjects in science. Then, okay, I was interested. I got some interest. I said, okay, maybe I should go for a science profession, a science career. Then I looked at all the possibilities that were available. I said, okay, chemistry looks better than all others. For the simple reason that chemistry is practical, then it's part of our everyday lives. Starting from the air we breathe here in this room, starting from the clothes we are wearing, starting from the cars we drive, going to food we eat, going to medication we take, you find some chemistry there, good part of chemistry going on there. So that really prompted my interest. I say, okay, I need to join this field because it's very, very relevant. So that is how, after my high school, I said, no, I should pursue a career in chemistry and maybe do farming and other things as my hobby.
Oh, right. Yeah, you can, certainly.
Yeah.
Do you have any cows today?
Yes, back home I have.
Oh, you do?
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah.
How sweet.
I have a farm, I have cows there, and my children enjoy going there, looking at the cows. And
oh, I love that. Who's taking care of the cows?
I have a cousin there taking care of the ancestral farm and other stuff there.
I love that.
Yeah.
Living in two worlds.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about your research as a green chemist? Green being bio-clean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I was introduced to green chemistry first when I was starting my graduate studies in South Africa. And then if we talk about green chemistry, we talk about a different way of thinking, a different philosophy of doing chemistry, where you need to think about what you are doing more responsibly. For example, suppose you want to get a painkiller, right? You need to go to the lab and do what you need to do and get your painkiller. It doesn't help to get a very effective painkiller, but which in the end will cause, say, cancer. Right. So before green chemistry advanced, people were just looking at one objective they wanted to achieve, forgetting about what could be the collateral damages. So when green chemistry came, now people said, okay, we should look at the holistic analysis of what we are doing. You produce a painkiller, correct, but what is going to do to the environment, for instance?
Right, will it kill the fish?
Yeah, maybe it might kill the fish. Mm-hmm. Maybe it might destroy vegetables. It ends in the environment. So Green Crimson say, no, let's look at the holistic view of things, of what we're doing, and try to come up with a proper circle, full circle analysis of what we're doing to save the person who is doing the experiment and also to save the environment. So try to do sustainable processes. So after my graduate studies, I did some work in green chemistry where I worked in some solventless reactions where you can do reactions in dry media. You don't need to use any solvent because solvent might be harmful. They are volatile. They can damage our body. So what if we isolate the solvents? So I did some work in that area where I worked on some dry reactions in the absence of solvents. I did also some catalysis reactions, which also contributes to green chemistry. And I worked on some biofuels, where you have the biofuel, these fuels produced from vegetable oils, for example. Mm-hmm. And then you can improve their properties by using a catalyst. So I did some work on polymerization reactions, production of rubber products, again, focusing on the green aspect of those reactions. Yeah, and on top of that, also in teaching, I worked on improving some school experiments where we had to remove some aspects which were not green, then replacing by other components which are just to be better, to be safer, to be good for the kids and for everyone else.
Nice. I think you have embodied your parents' wish for you to have integrity as well and to be hardworking.
Yeah.
You've done that through your green chemistry in this case. Sweet. Last summer, you joined your wife and children here in Portland. Can you share some of your early impressions of Maine? Having been here less than a year, what do you think?
Yeah. No, Maine is good. I really enjoy Maine so far, Portland and the surrounding areas. People are very friendly, very welcoming. They are willing to help every time you approach them. Even sometime when you don't ask, you see somebody asking you, can I help you? Are you looking for this and that? Maybe can I? Before even you ask that, no, I need this, I need that. So Maine is good so far. People are very friendly, good communities. Maybe the only difference from home is the weather.
There's a big difference there.
Yeah,
Tell us about how fabulous the weather is in Rwanda.
Rwanda, we don't have what we call summer or what we call winter. It's average temperatures throughout the year. It will be like between 15 Celsius, 25 Celsius throughout the year. It might rain. We have some rainy seasons, dry seasons, but temperature-wise, same throughout. We don't need to shovel. We don't need... it's pretty good weather there.
I think you might have perfect weather there.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because it doesn't get scorching hot or cold. You're more mountainous, right? So it just stays lovely.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's lovely. The only cold part is the volcano side. Because of the altitude, the higher you go, it gets colder. But the rest of the country is just fabulous. It's good. The weather is good.
I'd like very much to go to Rwanda someday. You have beautiful national parks.
Yeah.
All kinds of biodiversity that is gorgeous and such a rich culture.
Yeah.
And you've done something amazing in rebuilding that country in such a constructive way after such horrible destruction.
Yeah.
That takes a real powerful spirit and will. So it takes a long time to get reestablished in a new country sometimes. I wonder what your hopes and dreams look like for your career and for your family 5 years from now.
Yeah, that's true. Coming to a new place, you need to learn new things. You need to get used to different lifestyle, different way of doing things. Yeah, it's a learning process. But I think we are getting there. We are getting there. We have small advantage that we lived in different countries, I and my family. So meeting new people, meeting new challenges. We have a bit of experience in that. So we hope that some years down the line, we should settle down satisfactorily. My hope is that maybe I'll join an education institution where chemistry is taught, where I can do some research. Why not green chemistry? Then settle down and push forward my career. As of for my kids, I'm hoping that they've settled down in schools, learn the new system, succeed in school, and also in all aspects of life. So as my parents used to say, we should have integrity, share moral values. Don't focus on one thing. Look at the person as a whole. So I hope, our hopes is that we should settle down in the U.S. and achieve our goals, be responsible citizens, and be useful, not only to us, but to everybody else, be useful in the society.
Hmm. Apollinaire, you are a kind and open-hearted even person, even after unimaginable loss. You are driven to learn, work hard, and contribute to your community. And I wish you and your family every happiness with your new lives here in Maine.
Thank you very much.
I think it's beautiful that your name actually means one who is kind.
Yeah, correct.
Munyaneza.
Yeah, someone who is kind.
I think you are very well named. Thank you very much for being my guest today.
Thank you too.
I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Apollinaire has selected for us. Can you tell us about why you chose this song to wrap things up?
Thank you. I selected this song by Cecile Kayirebwa. Cecile is a famous Rwandan singer. Many people from Rwanda know her songs. The song is called Rwanda. She talks about how Rwanda is, the beauty of Rwanda. And towards the end, she gives some feeling how a Rwandan away from home feels about his home country. So it's like a feeling how somebody from the diaspora feels about missing home, not being home for the time being, and what are the aspirations for the future and for the country.
Sounds like a perfect selection for today. Thank you.
Thank you. Kawa-ho.